Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Morales. Thank you very much for that introduction right there. We've been doing it all week. We'll continue to do it for the rest of this week. We did it last week as well. We're shouting out senior students, giving them a senior spotlight on air. Tonight, we have Isabella Zavala, softball player from Bray Olinda High School. You could still, by the way, you still have time to nominate a classmate or yourself. So if you haven't done that yet and you want a chance for the senior shout out, email the station, ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com. ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com with your name, school, and sport you play, or post a short video on Instagram or Twitter and include #710SeniorShoutout. Isabella, thank you for being a part of the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing good. Doing all right. So tell me a little bit about your career in high school as a softball player. What position did you play?
Well, as a freshman, I made varsity, which was like crazy to me because I was like super excited. And then
as a freshman, let's slow down here. As a freshman, you made varsity?
Yes.
Jesus, slow down. Slow down. Okay. tell me what position did you play?
My primary is pitcher, but I started as a third baseman my freshman year because they had a senior pitcher. Mm-hmm. But I definitely, like, I had to earn my spot, and I felt like I did my freshman year. That was probably one of my best years in high school. So I really enjoyed it, like, everything about high school, like, all my friends and teammates, and it was just, like, a great experience.
So what was give me some of your best memories. So and I'm talking specifically about softball, and then we'll talk about just school in general. But when you were playing those 4 years that you play varsity, what are some of the things that stand out to you? What did you enjoy most every time that you played for your high school?
Mainly, like, my teammates. As a freshman, I was actually really close to the seniors, and, like, they made me feel, like, very welcome. And, like, usually you would be intimidated by the seniors. And, like, sorry, I went, like, blank.
No, you're good. And, I mean, you walked in as a freshman. I love it, too. And that's great that the seniors were welcoming to welcome you in there. But what was that like, by the way, coming in as a freshman playing for a senior softball team? Did you kind of feel a fish out of water because everybody was older than you?
Yes, it was, like, extremely intimidating because it felt like you're put on, like, such a high level, and it's, like, if you messed up, like, it felt like it was all your fault, but, like, it really wasn't. It was just, like, the anxiety of it. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it because it made me, like, very determined to, like, earn my spot on the team. Mm-hmm. And, like,
yeah, you had something,
like,
to prove.
I wanted to start, so it was, like, I wanted to do anything I could do, like, at practice, take extra reps, stuff like that.
So by the time you became a senior, how much different was it for you? Like, now were you looking at some of the girls who were younger than you? And I guess, you know, in a sense, it's kind of weird, right, to be a high school athlete but almost be a mentor to some of the younger girls. Did you feel like you had that experience now that you can help them?
Yes, I definitely felt like I had certain people that looked up to me, like some of my close friends. And it was, like, kind of like nerve-wracking at times because it's, like, you always wanted to, like, do good. So it's, like, not, like, showing off at the same time, like, showing, like, doing that because.
Like, not like showing off, but showing off, you know, just showing off a little bit.
Because, like, you want to do your best, but, like, it's not always going to be exactly like that.
No, of course. Of course. So how about high school in general? What are you going to miss? What are you going to miss most about high school?
I'm going to miss seeing all my friends. Like, that's my main thing. Because, like, I actually enjoyed going to school, mainly for the friends part. But I enjoyed being, like, the atmosphere of everything. So that's one thing. And, like, going to, like, football games and basketball games.
Mm-hmm.
stuff like that.
What has this been like for you to just all of a sudden high school stops, at least, you know, going to school? I know you're still getting your education at home, but what's that experience been like for you? Is that been not just a surprise, but it's been kind of tough? You know, you just don't get to be with your friends anymore.
No, yeah, it's like, it's a bummer because it's like season had just started for me. And I was like super excited because I'm like, this is my senior year. Like, this is my last year to do everything that I'd want to do. Like, I had goals set for this year. And then it's like, it was like all taken away from me within a few days.
What's your favorite subject? What do you enjoy? What do you enjoy studying at school?
English. I really enjoyed English.
So what's the plan after high school?
I am going to Eastern New Mexico University, and I plan on majoring in kinesiology at the school.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's great. Now, are you going to look to continue to play softball, or is this just going to be for school?
No, I'm continuing softball in college.
That's fantastic. That's great. Now, have you been – so how does that work? So when you're kind of making a determination of where you're going to play softball – do you spend a lot of time at each school that you go visit? I mean, have you got a chance to spend time at the school that you're going to attend?
Yeah. In September, I went on a visit to the school to, like, look around, like, see how the atmosphere was. Because where it is, it's a very small town. So, like, coming from California, like, being in such a big, like, big cities around me and, like, surrounded by so many people, I was like, I have to see this for myself. So going to the college was definitely a new experience because there wasn't that many people, but I really enjoyed it because it's a very homey feeling. So I'm excited for college.
I was just going to say, like, what a cool experience, you know, when that does come. And I know that it's unfortunate that, you know, high school got cut the way it did, and there won't be certain things that are very important for a senior in high school, but it's also really, really cool that you're going to continue your softball career in college, and you'll be studying kinesiology, and you're going to be in a completely different state. Sounds like you got a lot of exciting things coming up. So I appreciate you taking some time and submitting to be a part of the show, and we wish you nothing but the best, all right?
Thank you so much.
All right, that's Isabella Savala. Interesting. Interesting to see somebody who's a freshman in high school, they're playing senior, or they're playing varsity their senior year. That's pretty damn impressive. Have you guys ever been to, have either of you been to New Mexico? Have you guys ever gone?
I have never been to New Mexico, but my best friend was stationed out there in New Mexico for a couple years.
Kind of an underrated state. A very underrated state. I was surprised how Santa Fe is a awesome, awesome place. Albuquerque, not as much, but New Mexico is that's a cool state. Did you guys ever get into Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul?
Oh, I love
Breaking
Bad.
The first thing, I've never been, but I've driven through. But the first thing I do is go visit all those spots.
I did that. What was remember the car wash in Breaking Bad?
Yeah, where the he one was that he worked.
Okay,
at.
I went and visited that one. Where else did I go? There
did
were
you
a
go
couple
to the
like,
house.
Oh yeah, definitely went
how
to the
it's
house.
Like, have you, was it like heavily guarded like it is now, where the family like doesn't even let people like take pictures in front
oh,
of
man.
Them and stuff?
It's fenced up. 100% yeah. It's fenced up because Jess, I mean, imagine how big was Breaking Bad, and the house where a lot of this stuff was shot was just in a regular neighborhood. So
oh, no, I can imagine.
You
can imagine.
Literally drive down that cul-de-sac. And but yeah, I did go to go to the house. It's an underrated state. Like, I think that's so cool. And it's different now when we, like, you talk to somebody who's 17, 18 years old and they're about to go to college. You're like, damn, you got such a cool 4 years coming up. You know what I mean? That's that's a great. She's in a great position to go, and that's awesome that she's going to play some softball. All right, we got halftime coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. By the way, who picked this beat? Whoever picked – Jess, was that you or was that you, Curtis?
It was all Jesse.
No, it was all me, my friend.
Fellas, it's just –
Ooh,
Jess,
devil.
A perfect,
I'd like to guess.
Perfect beat. I mean, just a perfect beat for halftime.
Oh,
Okay, I got a quick question for you guys.
I've been trying to slowly get this song in the station somehow, and I finally
It's a great beat. By the way, that's how it should be. I mean, it's good to just have different type of music, but it's just a great beat. Like, this is one of those beats that could be in the background, and you don't even notice it. It's just like, chilling with you. So it's a perfect beat. I want to throw a name out to you guys real quick. You guys know who Imonie Bates is? Imonie Bates.
Bless you. I do not.
Emonia. What did you say, Curtis?
No, I just made a bad joke. You can continue.
Okay, Imonie Bates. Okay, so you guys have no idea who he is?
No idea.
Okay. I'm just going to set up a little bit of who he is. High school player of the year. So he won the high school player of the year. I think it's like the Gatorade player of the year or something like that. Okay. He's considered one of the best high school prospects since LeBron. Okay. 6'9" wing.
Big praise.
6'9" player. And he's a wing player. Okay. Is ranked number one in ESPN's top 25. So why is that a big deal? I mean, look, every year they do these rankings. Do you know why this is a big deal this year?
Did he choose his college? Is that why it's a big deal? Is he chose like some weird school or something?
No, even better than that. Curtis, any idea why this is a big deal?
No idea at all.
The dude's a sophomore. He's a sophomore in high school, okay? And he's
I didn't even know he could be ranked as a sophomore.
High school prospect since LeBron. He's a high school player of the year, and he's a freaking sophomore. How crazy is that?
He must be pretty good.
Jess, I looked him up on just some of his highlights. I think it's Ball is Life, whatever that site is, right? So I've looked up some of his YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Really thin. Like, he's Kevin Durant thin, you know, but 6'9", okay? And he's got a jumper. He could get to the basket, just exactly what you expect. Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics tweeted at him congratulating him. Dwayne Wade tweeted at him earlier today congratulating him. He's top 25, or he's ranked number one in ESPN's top 25 for the 2022 class. He still has two more years of basketball, and he's already the best high school player of the year. That's freaking insane to me.
I mean, I don't know how you can get higher. Can he just forego his last 2 years of high school and just enter into college already? Because, I mean, if you're getting that high praise.
What he has to hope too, Jess, is that college – you know how right now it's still you go to the league for 1 year and then you come in. You come 1 year after high school. He could potentially be the number one high school player of the year at, you know, whatever age he is as a sophomore and still not come to the NBA for another 3 years. So imagine just his body, his development. He'll put on some weight. He'll gain more and more experience. They're saying he's the best high school prospect since LeBron. Now, a lot can change. We'll see what happens, but I just think that's impressive. We'll keep it rolling here. Jess, why don't you do what you have? What do you have over there?
So what I got is earlier today on Yahoo Sports, does the name – oh, lost it here. Jay Quay, meaning – I'm not sorry. Jared Quay. He hosts –
Let me look him up real quick.
Look him up. Look him up. Why you look him up? I'll finish setting up. He has a show on Yahoo Sports. he was on Yahoo Sports The Rush. He had a special guest on, Adrian Gonzalez, former Dodgers first baseman, and they talked about, you know, a lot of stuff from the baseball and the quarantine, his thoughts on that. He said he'd most enjoy spending quarantine time with Yasiel Puig because he'd get annoyed of him, but he'd hear the conversations.
That's
which
great.
Sounds like Yasiel Puig. But what I'm going to ask you is how they ended the video. He asked Aegon how he makes or describes his perfect taco, and this is what he said.
Okay. So for me, there's only one way to make it. You know, the way we make it in Tijuana, which is corn or flour tortilla. You can choose. They're both just as amazing. Carne asada, and then you just put onion, cilantro, guacamole, and salsa on it. Sprinkle it with a little lime, maybe sprinkle a little salt on it, and, you know, there you go.
Ya sabes.
So, very simple taco that he described there. It's not exactly my perfect taco. There's a couple things that I would change. But, Alan, describe what is your most absolute, by far, perfect taco on this Taco Tuesday.
Okay, I'm going to give mine. Curtis, you give yours after, and then Jess, you finish it up by giving your perfect taco. By the way, I'm starving. You know what I used to always do? Remember how I would do on YouTube? I do the post game show after the post game show.
That'd always be the top of the top.
They would always tell me King Taco because I would leave late and I'd be like, guys, I gotta go. I'm starving. I gotta go get some food before there's a grocery store next to me that closes at midnight. And they'd all be saying, when are we all going to King Taco? Like that was kind of the joke that was running in there. The best taco for me, by the way, Adrian Gonzalez, let's just kind of think of that Tijuana, like he's talking about. How about he played for the Padres, and we know they've got phenomenal – San Diego's got great Mexican food. And then he played for the Dodgers, which is basically known for their Mexican food as well. So let's just say this guy's got a lot of experience of what a perfect taco is. So for me, I would do a corn tortilla. I'll do carne asada. I'll do guacamole. I'll definitely do some cilantro, a little bit of pico de gallo, lime just like he mentioned. And I'm good with that. If it's simple like that, I don't need the sour cream. I don't need the rice. I don't need any of that other stuff. I think that's my perfect taco. Carne asada, guacamole, pico de gallo, cilantro, and a little bit of salsa, and I'm more than set. Curtis, what's your perfect taco?
I'm pretty close to what Aegon was saying, since, you know, I grew up Hispanic, so I went to the parties where you get the taquero, and you know that's what they bring. They don't bring a lot of stuff, but they do bring you the cilantro, the onion, and then all the salsa. But for me, for the meat, I like al pastor. Have you ever had al pastor? It's that spicy pork. That's my favorite. So I go al pastor with all the fixings, and then find the hottest salsa. But yeah, pretty much just
hottest
keep it
salsa.
Simple.
Are you good with the, like, you could do the spicy? The
Yo,
spicy.
I'll burn my mouth. I like that burn. Apparently, as a kid, I ate jalapeno peppers like off the cutting board. So,
okay, I got a question for both of you guys, because you guys there are some similarities, right? So, my background's Middle Eastern, and it's big families as well, and you get together and you eat way too much food. What is that Mexican? Like that getting together, that tradition on a Sunday or something along those lines. What's at the table? Like what is it that you guys are eating when everybody's coming over? What are like the go-to dishes that are always on the table?
Dang, that depends on the holiday.
Family?
No, it depends on the holiday. Okay. It depends on if you're talking Christmas. Okay,
he's right.
It depends on the holiday, 100%.
Because holiday, okay, you bust out the tamales Christmas? And all that. That's the time you bust out tamales and the pozole and everything like that, because it's, you know, colder and all that. But a lot of parties really do just kind of have, you know, a basic, either a taquero or something to that effect, and then a lot of beer and tequila.
And squirt. Jesse, does that sound about right?
Yeah, I mean,
and that ice cream that comes in the bucket, not a normal ice cream.
Oh, cup. That like 3 gallons, 5 gallons.
That's
like,
awesome.
A
that's
bucket awesome. With the red handle. With the red handle. Yeah, no, yeah, definitely. It's got carne asada, chicken. Every now and then you'd get hamburgers, but for the most part, it'd always be some form of carne asada, some form of chicken. Every now and then,
bro,
you know,
Mexican food
get, like,
is so good.
Ribs.
Mexican food is so good.
Y'all
I'm
getting
starving
nostalgic right now.
I'm starving right now. Listen, look, I come – it's funny because growing up in San Diego, look, I know it's a different type. Like L.A. has its own style and flavor of Mexican food. San Diego has their own style of and flavor of Mexican food. But I grew up in San Diego. There's taco shops everywhere. Very similar to L.A. But like in San Diego, I'm not kidding. You don't go very far and there's a taco shop. So I grew up eating a lot of – Mexican food, but it's a whole different ball game. That's why I bring it up for like a holiday or when it's a family gathering. That's a different type of Mexican food, and it's also as authentic as dishes get. All right, Jess, what's your favorite?
My
perfect taco. Your perfect
My taco. Perfect taco would consist of a corn tortilla, carne asada, onion, cilantro, and sauce. I'm not going to take the hot sauce. I could do it, and I like spice, but there's something when you have that sweet middle ground of like just enough spice where it tickles your tongue,
mm-hmm.
but you still get down your throat and you feel like that sweetness.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's fellas, my fellas, we gotta, the show's over, man. I'm going to a taco shop.
Hey,
right
when this quarantine ends, yeah. we'll all meet up. We'll get a taquero and we'll do it right.
That's and you guys, I'm sure you guys know the authentic places, the good places. Oh, yeah. So you guys can offer some tips on that. By the way, is it horchadas as well, horchada at home or not?
Oh, aguas frescas. That's any one of those flavored waters. I liked horchata a lot. I also like Jamaica. That's like a hibiscus tea. It's essentially a hibiscus tea.
Hibiscus, yeah.
But like as an iced tea or a pineapple.
Orange juice. Bang, man. Orange Bang is where it's at.
Damn
it's
you,
like
Jesse.
Like an orange cream soda. Mm.
Damn you for bringing up this food right now.
You know
damn
what? I'm gonna have to get like carne asada tacos or carne asada torta from the corner tomorrow because this I just can't do it no more. I am starving and I want some carne asada in my life.
Okay, I have another question. I have another question here. Is carne asada fries popular in LA or no?
Oh yeah, I love some carne asada fries.
Okay, is California burrito popular in LA? Do you guys know?
I don't think it's as popular.
Yeah,
I don't think there's
a
lot of
either.
No, I don't think there's a lot of like hype or even like awareness to it. Like, not a lot of places do it, and even if they do, it's not like, you know, you would think fries in a burrito. Come on, that's you're gonna put that out there, but it's just like another item on the menu. It's just like very this burrito, you know, carne asada. We have chicken. We have a burrito with fries and carne asada.
Mexican food is
we
so good.
We have shrimp. And it's just
Mexican
like,
food.
No.
Mexican food is so good, and in LA, like the culture is such a beautiful thing. Like it's so authentic. You know what I mean? Like. Mm-hmm. Most of the Mexicans, there's so many Mexicans too, born and raised in LA. So like, there's a beauty to LA culture and LA food, and a lot of that has to do with a lot of it's built around the food. That's a great topic to bring up. All right, Curtis, what do you got over there?
Nothing big. I kind of brought this up to Jess earlier in the day because I just thought it was kind of ridiculous. So do you see the whole thing that's going on with Ticketmaster right now?
What's happening?
They quietly I don't know if it was last night or overnight, they basically changed their like terms of service and their refund policy. They came out saying, oh yeah, you know, normally they refund if like, something's postponed, canceled, mm-hmm. or just, you know, rescheduled completely. Apparently overnight they changed it to only cancellations. So now people are real angry because they did it in the silence of night, and people are mad because now they're only covering straight up cancellations, but no one's canceling anything right now.
Well, if you guys, I mean, this is,
it's just super shady, and I want to get your guys' thoughts on that.
Well, it's a fine line. You know, you guys on Friday, if you remember Bill Shakin from the LA Times, this was part of the conversation that we were having was if you have Angels season tickets or Dodgers season tickets, or maybe you just bought tickets to a game, right? There's only one way you can get your money back if the event is canceled. Well, none of the events are canceled. And I know there's a reason why they're doing this. It's not canceled because what if baseball comes back in 30 days and they replay the games, which, by the way, is not going to have fans. So I think I'm destroying my own argument as I'm talking mm-hmm. it out loud. But let's say concerts. Let's say – do you guys think – we've had this as a conversation. I keep following what's going on at SoFi Stadium. Two employees have had tested positive for COVID-19. They have 3,000 employees that are working there, but they are approved to keep working. There's a curiosity of hopefully this thing gets built. But once it gets built, it's not like there's going to be events there coming up in the next 30 or 60 days. So these events.
It's going to look pretty from the planes that fly over. Essentially, it's all it's going to do.
By the way, and eventually they will be open and there, you know, hopefully will be fans again. I think what's happening, Curtis, I think these companies are not prepared for forking out X amount of dollars back. They probably don't even have the money prepared. You know what I mean? So I think they're trying to buy as much time as they can. Once they get canceled, they'll refund the money or they'll give you a credit. But right now, probably the biggest thing for all these venues and teams and everything else is that it says postponed. And because it says postponed, you don't get your money back yet.
Yeah, it's just shady in the method they use to change it, I think. and they're turning around and telling everybody, oh, you can resell it on our marketplace if you need to get rid of it. I don't know. It's just kind of rubs me the wrong way.
Oh, definitely. It's so sketch. Like, come on.
And now's not the time.
No, I'm not. Like, you said everything, Alan. It's like they're doing this because they're not ready. They weren't prepared. And at this point, they're trying to find a way to salvage whatever they can. Mm-hmm. And they're doing basically anything that they think that they have to do, no matter what, you know. But obviously the public thinks, because there's no way that something this big happens without just like, well, you know, we're probably going to get a big backlash on this, right? Like, no, we got to do it. They have to do it because in the end of the day, it's a business.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is as equal as important as a question. And this is the final one that I have for both of you guys. Jesse, do you have a favorite taco shop in L.A.?
Oh, man.
See, I just kind of I left the whole Ticketmaster thing, and I'm like, I want to eat. I want to go back to food. do you have one, Curtis? That comes to mind right when I say it.
Well, I'm, you know, you guys know I don't live over here, so it's kind of like for me.
It's okay.
I've been to Tito's is great. Mm-hmm. That's all really I've had over here. And then
across
the street from us here at LA Live, and that's about it here. But the best place is when my mama cooks it. So.
There you go.
Ah, nice. So I'll throw two out there. One is in downtown LA. I used to go there with my dad almost every Sunday. It's called El Tarino. It's right off Olympic and Hoover, I believe. One of the best tacos you ever get. And that's nostalgic for me just because
it's Carino.
El Tarino with the T.
Oh, El Tarino.
Tarino. Mm.
Yeah, and there's another one over here in New Island.
And by the way, if you were doing that with your pops growing up, like, those memories are gold. Oh. You know what I mean? Like, those that takes it to another level. And what's the other one that you're mentioning?
Another one is one near where I live in the Eagle Rock area. It's on Eagle Rock Boulevard near the Target, across the street. There's a place, a taco truck called Leo's Tacos. That by far is some of the best guacamole I've ever had. And I'm not a big fan of guac, but when I eat there, I'd eat the tacos with the guac.
Bro, I love guac. I love guac. All right, that's it. No more food talk. Fellas, I appreciate it. Thank you, Jess. Thank you, Curtis. For those who are driving around right now, they're listening on the app. Do you know what today is? Today is the 16-year anniversary of one of the greatest finales to a regular season, I think, in NBA history. I'll tell you what that is coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
I'm trying to figure out, is Mario trying to say that only if I'm hammered, I'm entertaining? I think that's what he was saying right there. By the way, quick reminder. So NFL draft, how is this thing going to work? It comes up in about a week and a half, a week from Thursday. Kevin Safer, NFL writer for ESPN. He's coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. And we'll kind of get into that conversation and just see how much different is this going to be. What was the determination of why the NFL was pushing so hard to put this together right now? And I could probably answer some of those questions because I think there's a there's definitely a business side of it where everybody's home that they do want to hold it. But before we do that, you know, yesterday there was an anniversary for the great late Kobe Bryant. 4 years ago yesterday was his final game. Dropped 60 points on the Utah Jazz. And I spent most of Lakers talk talking about my personal experience of being at that game, taking calls, reading off different tweets. Michael Thompson came on. You know, he told his story. Brian Kamenitsky came on. That game was so incredibly special for so many Laker fans. And by the way, you don't even have to be a Laker fan to remember that game and know that that was, you know, one of those evenings that whatever athlete ends their career to end it that way, we may never see it again. 16 years ago today was another Kobe Bryant memory. And for Laker fans out there that have been watching Los Angeles Lakers basketball for a while and watching the Lakers during the Kobe and Shaq years, you're going to know exactly what this game is based on the highlight. Here's Kobe Bryant 16 years ago.
Where are the Blazers going to go for their foul? Or what are they going to do?
Kobe with it, guarded by Patterson, staying outside the arc, dribbling. Patterson keeps his feet. Kobe forces. Oh! He made it! He threw it in! In the regular season, possibly. Out to Kobe. Fall away high.
I could listen to that highlight 30 more times and not get bored of it. If you guys remember that, so that was 16 years ago today. It was the year the Lakers, their final regular season game against the Portland Trailblazers. They were down 3 in regulation, and Ruben Patterson. You guys remember Ruben Patterson, the quote-unquote, the Kobe stopper, is trying to stop Kobe Bryant. Trying to stop Kobe from hitting a three to put the game into overtime. Kobe nails the first three. Everybody goes crazy. At that time, I think it was still called the Rose Garden. You see all the Laker fans that were there. Okay, then we go to overtime. Lakers down 2. 1 second left on the clock. Who do you think is going to get the ball? Shaq, by the way, I think was on the bench because he fouled out. That's the year Karl Malone and Gary Payton and Derek Fisher. That was that team that, you know, frankly, it was a disappointing season for the Lakers. They lost to the Pistons in the finals. Who do you think is going to take the last shot? Kobe gets it. 1 second left. I think it was Theo Ratliff that came out on him on that final shot. And when they just played in slow motion, Kobe just the high arc in three over a 6'11", 7-foot Theo Ratliff hits nothing but nylon. Lakers win the final game of the season. Lakers actually end up winning the division with that three-point shot. It was vintage Kobe Bryant as we remember him. And every time now that I see, and I love that Twitter does this and Instagram and everything else, they, I don't know if they're going out of their way to find these special Kobe moments, but I love it because for us now, it's different. You know, for most Laker fans out there, and just in general, everybody, whether you're a sports fan, a Laker fan or not, the way, you know, just 2 years ago or 2 months ago, over 2 months ago or so, that the tragic passing of Kobe and his daughter Gigi, it was just such a sad circumstance in so many measures, and the other 7 that lost their lives in that helicopter crash. Now, when you see Kobe highlights or you talk about Kobe, it's different, you know, and that's not going to change. I will say this for me. I think the first 2 months I couldn't and didn't want to watch any of the highlights. I didn't want to see anything that Kobe was doing in the past. Old interviews, Matt Barnes, and they do the All the Smoke podcast, him and Steven Jackson. I remember seeing him on there. And I was like, nah, I can't watch it. I don't want to watch it. But I think over the last couple of weeks, I've been watching it a little bit more. So and the Lakers always put out these unbelievable tweets, the team does, on Kobe Bryant highlights or moments that I might have forgot about. He was 20 years with the Los Angeles Lakers. So easily you can forget some of these. You remember the iconic moments, but then there's also these other moments that you don't always – you just forget about. The moment this one came up, I hit Jesse with an email. I'm like, Jess, can we find these highlights, please, so I could play that audio on air? And it's a great audio clip as well. At that time, it was with KCAL9. But just kind of looking back and playing some of those Kobe highlights, I hope Twitter and Instagram keeps doing it. And if there's ever a 7 years ago today, 10 years ago today, 15 years ago today, here's what Kobe Bryant did, you can rest assured that I'm going to find a way to play that highlight on this show. And it's really just out of respect to the great Kobe Bryant. Okay, so these are the questions that are coming up about the NFL draft. First of all, how is the NFL draft even going to work this season? The NFL owners were pushing so hard to have the draft now, where there were actually GMs out there that were trying to push the date out. They're saying, okay, this isn't going to make sense. How are we all virtually going to do this? Are we all, you know, the team training facilities are all closed. Their draft rooms, they're not going to be in draft rooms. They're not going to be together. Everybody's going to be isolated in their own little world. That's the NFL draft that we have coming up. But I think there's something to it. And Kevin Seifer, the NFL writer for ESPN, he's coming up next. He's going to explain why the NFL is doing what they're doing and exactly how this NFL virtual draft will take place. All that is coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Great article right now. How does the NFL draft work this season? I think that's a question that many NFL fans have since the structure is obviously completely different. Kevin Seifer, NFL writer for ESPN, here to explain it. Kevin, thank you for joining the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I'm sure I'm not the only one, and I think your article does a fantastic job on ESPN.com just breaking down all the major questions. So I'm going to kind of go just along the article for those that haven't got a chance to read it. First question, I think, is a main question I'd say for the last 30 days or so. Why do you think the NFL was pushing so hard to have the NFL draft? And now it's going to be next Thursday, so April 23rd to April 25th. Why were they pushing so hard for that?
For a couple of reasons, I think. One is that really there's no guarantee that the circumstances in the country are going to change significantly or substantively in the next few weeks or maybe even the next few months. So they could have it under these circumstances now, and for all they knew, they could have similar circumstances in the summer or even into the early fall, and it would still be the same circumstances. So why not just do it now from that perspective? And the other one, frankly, is that there's a very captive audience literally right now. There's not any sports going on, and the NFL offseason has been by far the most eventful sports news that we have for any sport during this quarantine period. And there's an opportunity to reach a whole lot of people through that broadcast and through the 3 days. And so I think that it's an opportunity probably for them as well to keep the NFL and name in circulation and have a really, really highly viewed event.
Yeah, I think that's the one that stuck out to me. We'll use as an example, right? This weekend's going to be The Last Dance. That's that Bulls documentary gets pushed up. ESPN pushes it up, you know, a few months. It was supposed to be in July. And why they're doing that captive audience that you're referring to, do you think that has, you know, probably the biggest part to play in this? Is right now the only conversations we're having about basketball is if they're going to be able to finish their season. Major League Baseball, maybe it's a quarantine in Arizona where everybody has to stay there for 4 months. Most of the news has nothing to do with on the baseball field or on the basketball court. This is right. A different scenario for football, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and I don't want to say the NFL has been fortunate or has lucked out or anything, but just frankly, the timing of how this has all played out, you know, this is the NFL has had its normal offseason. You know, they had the, after the CBA was signed, you know, they had the combine and the CBA was signed, and then right when most of the country was locking down, they moved into free agency, which was maybe a little bit different because of the coronavirus. But for the most part, the news came just as fast. The content for media was just as plentiful, and then we did that for a couple of weeks, and then we moved straight to the draft. So for that probably 5 to 6 weeks, the first 5 to 6 weeks of this nationwide shutdown, the NFL has been just doing its normal stuff. What happens after the draft when they would normally be moving into OTAs and mini camps and that sort of thing, and they will not be doing that this year, most likely, I'm not sure. But up through the next weekend, it's been business as usual for the NFL, and they've really been the only sport, just because of the timing, that's been able to do that.
Kevin Seifer, NFL writer for ESPN, joining the Sliwa Show. You have a part of your article here. So the league doesn't have much sympathy for those GMs. What I'm referring to there is there was obviously some reports out there. A lot of GMs, or at least a certain percentage of them, were not crazy about having the NFL draft now, and for a number of different reasons. Is that the best way to put it? Is, you know, from an ownership perspective, it's, and for Roger Goodell, it's okay. Yeah, we get that's what you want, but under these circumstances, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, and frankly, that's not different. Not too different from the way the NFL often works. You know, the owners are the owners, and the commissioner coordinates their opinions, and they're in charge. And so usually what they want is what happens. And that's not dissimilar probably to a lot of businesses across the country. It's understandable why the general managers were hoping that this could get pushed back. There's less of an opportunity for them to collect the volume of information that they normally have in terms of medical rechecks and, you know, personal visits, bringing them into your facility, going out to visit prospects around the country. All that has been limited. So there's definitely probably less volume of information. And then the logistical aspects of conducting a draft from your basement, literally on your own, connected with the rest of your executive team and draft scouts and all that by Zoom or Microsoft Teams or whatever it ends up being, is different. And the chances for a mistake potentially are higher because of a lack of information or a lack of coordination or logistical problems. And those GMs know that the owners, you know, their bosses are not going to grade them on a curve. If they screw up the draft and it's because of those reasons, they're not going to get a pass on it. So for a lot of reasons, it's understandable. But I think the NFL, as we were talking about, just thought the opportunity was too big. Yeah. The obstacles were too small, and said, you know, we're going to do it. You guys figure it out.
You know, in a weird way, I've been one that was kind of questioning, like, well, okay, well, why are you guys in such a rush to do this? All the other sports are stopping. But, you know, the way you explain it, and to just see it from an owner perspective, and like you just mentioned, the audience is there to watch it right now. All these other leagues probably wish they were in a similar position as the NFL is. You know, there's no guarantee the NBA is going to crown a champ in 2020. That's very realistic that right. It could potentially not happen, right? Major League Baseball, right. They have a ton of questions. And if they do get an opportunity to play out the season, how many games? And I'm not saying that the NFL is not going to run into questions down the road. But I also see the portion of just saying, like, we are – much more fortunate than the other leagues. And that's just like you mentioned, from a timing perspective, that kind of just that fell on their lap. It's not something that, you know, obviously it literally fell on their lap. From a tech side of this, I know John Harbaugh, coach of the Baltimore Ravens, he had some concerns about cybersecurity. What is the thought process on that? Is there a concern that, whether it be other teams hacking in, or let's just say not other teams at all, some dude sitting in his basement doing the same thing that the other GMs and owners are doing. What's the concern from a security perspective?
You know, I think it's probably, I don't know if the coaches themselves have like a specific thing that they think is going to happen, but, you know, we all, have seen, if you just watch the news or keep up with current events, have seen that, you know, hacking happens, you know, like, and the bigger the profile situation, the more incentive there is. Back near the Super Bowl, the NFL Twitter account got, and a lot of teams' Twitter accounts got hacked. And I realize that's a third party platform, but, you know, you see that and you realize that, like, that can happen and the damage can be done. And, you know, we laugh and, you know, think that, you know, the NFL teams shouldn't have to worry about each other hacking into their Zoom conferences or whatever, or their Microsoft team video conferences. But I mean, there's been cases in pro sports where, you know, you look at the a few years ago in baseball with the Cardinals and the Astros, there was the issue of the Cardinals hacking into the Astros database. And so there's reason at least to bring up the question. And I think the NFL has maybe been a little bit, at least publicly, been a little bit insensitive to that. It's a legitimate concern, whether you know a ton about, you know, if you're the best IT guy in the world, or you're just the random person who uses a computer, you know that risk exists. And so where that goes, I don't know. You know, I know that the NFL is working with Microsoft and some other providers to enhance the security and give them a sense that this can be done without incident, but I guess we'll see for sure. But that it's a concern that a lot of people around the league have, and to me, it's legitimate. It's at least worth bringing up and making sure that it's locked down.
Kevin Stafer, NFL writer for ESPN, explaining how the NFL draft will work this season. We know all the changes just based upon the circumstances and COVID-19 stopping all big gatherings and events. And of course, this affects the NFL draft. Kev, I'll ask the draft process just in general. How does that work? Is there what's the game plan on that as far as just literally making the picks? And does it pan into a player at all? Like, how does that process work?
A lot of it is actually, crazy enough, we're 9 days out or 8 days out, less, a little more than a week out, and some of this is still being ironed out and subject to change if during testing it doesn't work. But the idea is to have every decision maker provided with a secure connection over the internet, with the NFL and the NFL draft officials, the people you would normally call in your pick to, or you would write down the name on a card and deliver it to those people. Those people will now take your pick directly over a video conference. If for some reason you get disconnected, and this is another thing, a lot of people are worried, what if my internet goes out? And so those are the kind of safeguards they have to, we all have that working at home, right? And so those are the kind of safeguards that they're having to ensure. And so if for some reason you can't get through on that, you can always call. There's landlines. Some GMs have had to have landlines installed in their house because, like a lot of us, they don't have them because they don't need them. And then if that doesn't work, you can always email it. And so those are the three possibilities, as I understand it right now, in terms of how to physically get your pick in. And then those general managers or whoever the decision maker is will also have a separate screen probably going with a video conference of their advisors, the people that would normally be sitting with them in the draft room. And so that will also be going on. And so that is sort of how the process will work from the teams. Roger Goodell will be apparently in his basement. He'll get the pick over video conference and announce it into a remote type camera that'll be in his house. And then 58 prospects have had cameras shipped to them, and hopefully they'll be able to set them up in their houses or wherever they are watching the draft. They've been asked to have less than six or less people with them for physical distancing, and then they'll be available to you'll get the reaction shot, I guess, and then those people would be available for interviews. The same with some people from teams. They'll be available through cameras that have been shipped to them for interviews, and we'll see how it goes. So that's the process by which the NFL is hoping that the draft will work. There'll be a joint broadcast produced by ESPN and the NFL Network, originating out of the ESPN studios in Bristol, to analyze the picks. But that's how the physical process of the draft is expected to work.
I think I'm more fascinated with how they're going to put the draft together than I am about the actual draft. The way you just explained it, I mean, just the small, simple things like you just said. What if somebody's internet goes down? They had to get phone lines installed, or you can email the pick. It's just – it may never be a predicament that this country's ever in again. I don't know. I'm just, or sports is ever in again. We'll see what happens. But it's just it's incredible how every sport has had to just figure it out on the fly. And like you said, 8-9 days out, and the NFL is probably still trying to figure out a lot of stuff before Thursday comes around. Kev, great information, man. I appreciate you taking some time and joining the Sliwa show. And I'm sure for a lot of listeners out there, just that helps a lot with what the structure is going to look like this starting on Thursday.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, I got a couple thoughts on what Kevin mentioned right there. The NFL draft is going to be huge for the league, and there's a reason why. And a lot of that just has to do with the timing. And the NFL was incredibly fortunate under all the awful circumstances everybody's gone through in the world with COVID-19. I'll explain what I'm talking about there. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. I love that promo with Kirk Morrison, who, by the way, I think, still working on it, but I think when the NFL draft starts, and it's a perfect kind of segue, we just had Kevin Seifert on NFL Writer for ESPN talking about the draft. I think for those 2 days, those 2 weekdays, Thursday and Friday, so a week from this Thursday and this Friday, Kirk will most likely be a part of the show. I will say this, just kind of the way Kevin explained, and we got plenty of time to talk about what the Rams should do with their picks, what the Chargers should do with theirs. We'll do that because it is a critical couple of weeks for both of those franchises here in LA. But it's a confusing draft. They've never done it like this before, but I agree with this. It is an incredible opportunity for the NFL right now. Think about, I've promoted it a couple different times, The Last Dance, that's coming up this weekend. It's coming up on Sunday. They moved that up a couple months. ESPN did. It was supposed to be in July. So they move it up a couple of months because they know everybody's sitting at home. Think about also, too, the NFL, how free agency went for them. They got a lot of publicity. That was a lot of the conversation. It's not like I'm having conversations on this show or some of these other shows on 710 ESPN or on the big network shows on ESPN. A lot of the conversations we're having about the NBA is, do you think there's going to be a season? Will anybody get injured if we do bring a season back? Will they have 2 weeks of training camp? Like, we're talking about things that don't necessarily have anything to do with the basketball court. Or on the basketball court. When I started the show tonight, I was talking about Kershaw. Kershaw's comments is saying, if there's a quarantine and we got to play 4 months, you know, somewhere and I can't see my family, yeah, I'm probably not going to sign up for that. Those are the storylines right now with baseball and with the NBA. The NFL has been different. And this is, you know, this is just by sheer luck, just timing-wise, right, that they just happen to be the sport that just finished their season after the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. You know, they happen to be in a predicament, a situation where they weren't 63 games in like the NBA was, or they weren't just a couple weeks away from starting spring training, or they had already started spring training a couple weeks away from opening day. So it's different for the NFL. And there is going to be an opportunity there. I have been giving heat to Roger Goodell, you know, for the last month or so, saying, well, why are you going to have the event right now? Just move the event. But I think Kevin made a great point of what's going to change in 30 days. We could potentially be just in the same position. It's not like they're going to go open up Vegas and you're going to have the NFL draft there with all these fans. That's not going to happen. So this opportunity that the NFL finds themselves in, it sounds like it's definitely going to work out for the NFL because I'm going to be watching. You're going to be watching. There's going to be a lot of people that don't have any other content, and whether you're a big NFL fan or you're not, and I know the NFL draft is already big as it is, but if you're more of a, I'm an NFL fan, but I'm not watching the NFL the way I'm watching the NBA. Thursday and Friday come NFL draft, I'm going to be watching the draft. Okay, a couple tweets, last couple of tweets here. Bill Laimbeer said the greatest player of all time is LeBron James. So the Lakers, LeBron James. I sent out this tweet earlier, what listeners thought about it. At Cap Kobe says, I think that argument only holds weight if LeBron wins one or two more championships, but I think it's a legitimate claim if he fought in a different era, but I don't know if Jordan had a defensive era set up in question. So basically, in a nutshell, LeBron's got to win more. I'm with him on that. If LeBron wants to be in that, like, that legitimate conversation, well, you got to at least have five. You have three right now. Get two more with the Los Angeles Lakers. Maybe that conversation is different. Mr. T.H. Whippy says, LeBron is my GOAT, and that's all that matters to me. Hashtag GOAT James. And then one more, at own conclusion, says, LeBron, most athletic playoff of all time and a great passer. But below average skill set in ball handling, jump shooting, footwork, and post game, MJ and KB had no weaknesses and are in much different conversation. Okay, so let's just say everybody certainly has their take when it comes to that conversation. I'm not a crazy big, hey, let's spend all this time talking about who the greatest player of all time is. But I will do it if somebody like Bill Laimbeer, who played against Michael Jordan, if he's going to claim that it's somebody different. Part of me thinks maybe there's a little bit more to that. Maybe it's a Bill Laimbeer Pistons player that just, let's just say, is a little bit bitter about the Chicago Bulls. Tomorrow, starting at 6 a.m., Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ at 6 a.m. to 10. George Sedano after that. And then Mason and Ireland from 3 to 6:30. Will Cain before that. Just a quick reminder, Sliwa Show all week long from 6:30 to 9 o'clock. LA, as always, greatly appreciate you tuning in and hope you guys have a great night.